That excluded Maria, who had other things to attend to. And we just simply refreshed our memory around the site and various locations, including Nathan Place, Sangster, Maple Street, Roberts Line, Richardson Line, and just Cleveley Line, just to get a sense of the location of submitters and their situation. And this morning, Ms. Oliver provided us with a revised hearing schedule because there were some submitters that dropped out. It'd be good, Ms. Oliver, if you also kept the current version of that schedule, sent that to Ms. Rankin so that she has a copy as well, and the full names of the people who appear tomorrow next week. In terms of that schedule, there are 2 days allocated for the council which may not be all needed. What the panel will do is indicate to the council which witnesses they think they need to hear from, and just give some feedback in terms of time. That may mean there is time at the end of the hearing, there's a gap. That may not be sufficient for you to do a reply, and we'll just have to have a rain check about whether that reply is in writing or there is an oral component to it. We'll just continue to check on that. But if you feel the need for time, then absolutely ask for it. So welcome, Ms. Bell.
Thank you, sir. And just a few other admin points from me before Ms. Bell kicks off. That's also a very helpful indication around the end of next week. The team's been thinking about that as well. And I think if we can be a little bit nimble next week, I'm obviously very happy to do whatever is necessary and be ready if we have that time for a reply on Friday, but equally if there's some components that could usefully take some more time, I'm grateful for that indication. Thank you, sir. I also just wanted to acknowledge and note apologies from two of the KiwiRail team who have been here all week. Ms. Pam Butler, who's been here all week, has had to go back to Auckland. Her father's ill, and so she sends her apologies. And Ms. Polson, who's been here all week as well, has had some childcare, a nanny quit. So that's neat when that happens. So she's just mercy dash home as well. So, but they do wanted me to pass on their apologies for not being able to be here today, and they'll both be back next week. Couple other points. The panel had asked for some homework from both Mr. Garrett Walker and Mr. Georgeson. So there were some questions from Commissioner Mason to Mr. Georgeson. He's prepared a short note. We'll hand up and also email through. And sir, on your request of Mr. Garrett Walker, just putting in writing his response to Ms. Quinn's addendum. So the kids have prepared that overnight, and we have those two addendum statements. We'll circulate those, and again, as I said, email them through so they can go on the website, and those gentlemen are available next week if there's further follow-up questions, but we wanted to get that to you today.
Thank you, and if Mr. Garrett Walker's statement could also address that he has his position, having read Schedule E and discussed with Ms. Bell the one plan.
Yes.
Whether he's satisfied that the implementation of this will address those issues.
It does address that, sir. Yes. Thank you. Another quick update, just in relation to the Mauna Whenua conditions. So Ms. Bell, in a minute, will take you through a fairly fulsome summary of the various matters, and I would note occasionally some folks talk about it as hospital passes to the planners, but in fact it's all the issues that Ms. Bell has been thinking about over the course of the last couple of years, and it's always a planner's real honor, I'm sure, to be able to sweep up all those comments in the end. So she'll be doing that fairly fulsome summary of both her evidence and work to date, as well as the range of issues that the panel in particular has interrogated, hopefully this week. And then what we've done overnight and over the last couple of days has been refining the draft set of conditions. We will have a hard copy for everybody here this morning, and Ms. Bell will do a page flip of where those conditions sit now. I think that's quite a helpful steer for council and submitters next week. As I noted before, sir, that's clearly an iterative process. Those are in no way the final set at all, or KeyRail's final position on those conditions, but in hearing what the panel has been raising, and as well reflecting carefully on the council suggested amendments, Ms. Bell will take you through that. In relation to the Manawatu conditions, those are at present untouched for the reasons we talked about earlier in the week. We need to hear from those submitters and hear that evidence next week. But in terms of a bit of an update on that, we've had some really helpful comments on the draft conditions from some of the parties and have been talking offline over the week around that. And I think it's fair to say that there's some positive and good faith discussions around that set of conditions and what they might look like. I think it's also fair to note, and I think it's important to be really transparent about this, I think some folks are appropriately challenged by the timeframes, and we acknowledge too that in the fairly brutal timeframes, a process like this involves, it can be really challenging to sort of say to a group, hey, can you get us edits on this in the next day or two? And I think it's fair to say there's a little bit of frustration from some of the folks you're going to hear next week about that. So we acknowledge that, and we can only push that as far as we can. But I think there's going to be further helpful discussion over the next few days, and we will have amendments to those conditions to put to you in closing at the end of next week.
Thank you. That's much appreciated, and we do understand that it's these things do compress and focus the mind and are difficult, but it is the legal environment we live in. Ms. Bell, Commissioner Sweetman is going to lead off the questioning because she's the most appropriate person when you've done your oral presentation. I think you understand where the significant issues are between the experts of the council, which really are the experts, the major body of experts that have tested the evidence of the application, and KiwiRail, and in particular between yourself and Ms. Copplestone. And so we'd like to hear on those, and I'm sure you're going to take us through. Just for my own sake, in terms of orientation, as I understand it, one of the key issues is around to what extent a designation, which is a territorial planning tool, should engage regional planning considerations. The extent of the role, the use of outline plans as opposed to conditions attaching to the designation, and the proper use of management plans, and then of course there's beyond that the whole efficacy of those conditions to work in a way that is optimal for KiwiRail in terms of flexibility, but also input from the community. So I sort of saw those four basket of issues. Ms. Sweetman is particularly conscious of the fact that designations are somewhat of a unique beast in the RMA context, and those are why some of those issues arise, and we're alive to that. My own personal view is that the existence of the outline plan as a method is not a complete answer to the need for some degree of framing and certainty around a designation of this type, because designations come in many, many colours and shapes. But it's about getting the right balance and getting the right tools for the right job. And so that's what I'm particularly interested in.
I became involved in the Kiwi Rail Freight Hub project in 2019 when Stantec was first appointed. And in our engagement brief, we were to deliver a robust notice of requirement that would be able to be given effect to into the district plan, and that Kiwi Rail would be able to provide for a freight hub taking it out to 2050. Rail is a unique type of operation, and a freight yard and an intermodal hub as set out in the objectives is not a common garden beast that we find across the country. There are examples. And so one of the tasks we had, and there was reference made to a North American engineer from Stantec, was to understand and help Kiwi Rail understand how will rail change in the course of that period of time. And so what we looked to do was to utilise international experience, because even though we have a rail team based in North America, they work across the world. And where will technology and changes take us going forward, and what could Kiwi Rail anticipate? So one of the key things we did was to understand how do they operate the existing freight yard. And so I accompanied our North American engineer, Mr. Laney, to the freight yard at Tremaine Avenue, to all of his meetings with the operational staff who work in the freight business, and in the sense of the hub being more than just a freight yard, with the maintenance activities, the network maintenance activities, the operational aspect of the marshalling and arrivals, to try and understand how the container terminal operates, what their challenges are and the constraints that they're working within. And it was really so that I could be on a sharp learning curve to understand the characteristics of a freight yard. I then watched the development of the master plan, and then through that process saw how there were fundamental aspects, and Mr. Skelton outlined those to you, of how a freight yard would operate. Mr. Moyle explained some of the challenges they've got going into the future, and as you've seen in the evidence from the economics perspective, we have a changing environment in that there is an expectation for rail to take a larger percentage of freight movements across the country. So the development of the master plan saw a complete analysis of what's going in and out of Palmerston North, how much stays in Palmerston North or is generated by Palmerston North and the functions. And you heard a lot about the importance of the Palmerston North location. So having looked at the goals, sorry, the objectives, and understood the freight yards, I then watched how the MCA process developed. So I just was watching to understand the issues that a freight hub of this nature would generate, and how the challenges were in finding the right place, and I'll go into that a little bit later on as well. But just also, having been through that process, I then went and attended every community engagement exercise undertaken by Kiwi Rail, and that was both the physical ones, but then once COVID lockdown hit, we started moving into a more Zoom type virtual meetings and presentations about the project. Spoke to a number of the directly affected. I didn't attend all of the meetings, but got to meet and hear some of the concerns of those directly affected property owners. I went to some of the early meetings with Mana Whenua, but didn't continue just because of the nature of the project. And then became involved in the preparation of the notice of requirement and determining the designation extent and the assessment of effects, and through that process taking the technical assessments and identifying gaps. And as we worked through those, and you saw how complex and how many elements are in this, we started with one set of expectations and then had to supplement those with a range of different technical expertise to help answer the questions. The MCA process was a really challenging exercise in some respects, because we had to bring our team of experts up to speed in terms of how a freight hub operated. So they got to do, as you did, to do site visits down to the freight yard at Tremaine Ave to understand elements of what it looked like. And then we had our technical expert give them an understanding of what it might look like and how it may operate in the future, so that they could understand as they looked around the corridor that was specified, the North Island main trunk, just where and how those characteristics might be impacting on the local environment. So our area of interest extended from the Manawatu River south of Longburn through to virtually Aorangi Marae to the north of Bunnythorpe. So we had a spread, and that was largely determined by the desire to be close to Palmerston North City, the industry and the distribution aspects that were identified in the objectives as being key. So there was a range of expertise, and there's a summary report in the volume two that explains the process that went through and all the attachments of their various assessments as they went from the long list all the way down to the short list. So one of the first tasks was to identify potential constraints and fatal flaws. And they developed that list both in terms of things relating to the particular requirements of KiwiRail to have a single graded footprint, to have that not encumbered by flooding, to make sure it was safe and was able to, not be affected by potential instability, that it wouldn't be constrained by the presence of large numbers of residential population and the potential effect of constraints on the operation of the nighttime operation of the hub, and the ability to connect into the roading network. So they went through the exercise, as I said, of whittling down from the long list down to the short list. And the process included mapping the constraints. And Jacob, is it possible to put that image up on the screen for the commissioners? This is an image that's in Appendix F of the NOR documentation. And it's at page 47, if you want to just... So I'll just explain what it is. The orange and yellow and purpley elements are the flight paths and protection areas of the Palmerston North Airport. The particular areas of constraint are the runoff, the landing and takeoff restrictions. Around the outside, it's more around things like you saw in the lighting assessment, issues relating to light and glare affecting the pilots coming in. The blue banded areas are areas where we identified existing residential zones and areas where the council had indicated future plan changes were going to result in land being rezoned to residential, and a noise buffer was applied around those. So essentially, Dr. Charles' associate did some modelling, looked at the zoning, and then applied a buffer, if you like, around from a sensitivity perspective.
You said Appendix F.
Yes.
But there is F in Volume 2 of the application.
There's multiple Fs.
It goes down to...
It's the summary report, MCA summary report.
Oh, okay. So is it F9, the strategic fit assessment?
No. It should be entitled MCA summary report.
It's the very first document in Appendix F, sir, before you get into the technical assessments, the summary report.
Okay.
So is it
might be alphabetical.
I don't have that. What am I looking for? What's the name of the dog? What's the header on that figure? What's the description below the bottom? What are the words at the bottom of that, let's say? That section there, it says. What is that? Say it again.
The title of the document, sir, is MCA Summary Report.
I know how to. I know. I thought I'd accessed all the reports. It's just not in my database, but that's okay. I'll get it. Okay.
There are two in the document itself. There are two images. There's one with just the constraints. And Jacob, maybe if you could just flip back two pages, that might help the commissioners just orientate themselves to the legend. So essentially, we went across the scope of the study area. And identified where are the constraints. So in amongst it, we had the noise buffer, the airport protection requirements. We identified the marae. We identified key public infrastructure, schools within the area, the issue of public reserves, any identified or specifically recognised ecological values in terms of blocks of land. And then there's a green squiggle that you can see, which is the Mangaone flood protection designation that's in the district plan. So basically we started from that plate and then we tried to identify what are these fatal flaws, what are the things or constraints that we need to consider. And the next image, which is the one I was referring to, is really just to show you that even the shorter list, because we started with 9, which included the Tremaine Ave, even the short list, which has 5 study areas there. We fatally flawed 4 straight away, and we ended up with these 5. And there are variations of a theme on these, but even these were going to be within some kind of constrained environment. So starting from that point, we realised that it wasn't going to be an easy exercise to provide for the freight hub in this particular area. And I think the recognition also, and it comes back to a question I think that Ms. Rimmer was asked yesterday, was about, and I think she made a comment that there were streams in every location. And in fact, this preferred site didn't score well in the stream sense, but it scored in the same category or to the same level as many others. The best scoring site was on the Fielding Aerodrome side, but that was quite close to the marae. And so for another reason, from a stream perspective, it scored well, but it was for other reasons it didn't come through the process. So it was really just to show that it was a really challenging opportunity, and what we tried to do was to recognise as many of the potential constraints and limitations of the location as possible through the process.
Thank you. That's quite interesting. Just the plan shows those, I knew the options, but shows it quite well in the way you did it graphically.
And just to fill in, we looked at a number of options with option 1 and option 2. We had variations on those to see if we could actually move the hub along in different locations to reduce, but as we did that, we actually created additional problems. So to move the hubs away from, for option 1 and option 2 away from the marae, we headed into the Transpower space, and we headed closer to Bunnythorpe. residential on that site. So every shoehorning, if you like, exercise created problems. And Mr. Skelton explained that we the exercise was to take the master plan and to adjust it so that it could fit within the constraints as best as possible. Option four, which you see is on the opposite side of the option three, the preferred location. Part of the challenge with that one was that, as you can see, it is both look to be within the airport runway access points, but the difference was that option four had had structures that were going to start to appear both in terms of separated grade access roads and other elements of the site that would impact on the actual runway and takeoff. Option three, the preferred site, it was literally the existing railway lines that were going to be the addition of the third line to turn into the site. So we managed to try and so we looked at four. They both scored quite comparably, but in the end, three was the one that created the least problems in terms of those types of constraints and issues. So having got the location, as Mr. Skelton explained, we developed the concept plan further and there were adjustments made in terms of bringing as much of the activity from away from Bunnythorpe and trying to protect and provide for the council's water bore. So you have that funny little triangle outside the designation at the Roberts Line railway road intersection. And we had to also meet all of KiwiRail's expectations around operational requirements. And Mr. Skelton, using his experience and working with the team, worked through what those might mean. And so you get some very fixed points around the height in relation to the gradients for linking into and out of the North Island main trunk. And then you get Mr. Leahy's requirements to ensure that there was sufficient fall. I'm using a simplistic non-engineering term for that, to allow for the floodwaters on the upper catchment on the Sangsters Road to flow underneath or through the site and not cause flooding above. And Mr. Leahy went into that in his evidence. So there were these competing requirements. Ms. Rimmel was wanting to bring the height down. Engineers were saying, but we have these other requirements that we have to address. So again, once even selecting the site, there were these challenges. And as we worked through it, we realised that we'd got the site from the concept plan perspective, but to be robust for KiwiRail, for taking it through and making sure that, and this picks up a little point, one of the points that you've raised, that it could comply with any regional consent requirements around particularly stormwater management, that there was sufficient area included within the designation so KiwiRail could maintain and operate its stormwater within its site and then in a way that would meet the quality state requirements. Yeah. And so that expanded the size. And I think that was a large shock to KiwiRail that the extent of land that would be required for stormwater management had to be included. And then along through that process, as Mr. Skelton explained, we realised that early on that railway road would be lost, and so access to all parts of the freight hub would be required, and so a new road would have to be part of, or access route would have to be part of that mix. And so these competing requirements and a lot of dialogue occurred to explain and justify, and then take it through the KiwiRail team to explain why this site kept getting larger in terms of what might be required.
Wherever it was located, though, given the trend, the trajectory of stormwater management, it was going to have to be a big site,
yep,
whether it was close to streams or not.
Yep. I think the surprise was the combination of the forecasts of what freight would need to be moved through the site and therefore the need to provide for larger facilities in terms of, and people have talked about the 1,500-metre train, what that meant. I think that was a surprise. And then obviously as you get that supersized, then the stormwater requirements go into that mix as well. And then with all these competing requirements, the opportunity to relocate the NIMT to provide for the noise buffer on the Sangster Road side, and this, the required landscaping to mitigate the visual impacts of that buffer was developed and taken further. So all of those elements together came into developing the designation extent. And I think that it was a process where things got added along the way, and, you know, with greatest respect to KiwiRail, as I said, it was probably a surprise, but they were totally aware of the requirements and the need to provide for its operational, to provide in the designation for sufficient land that it could meet its operational requirements, but then also address any issues that the regional consents in the future may generate to ensure compliance with whatever consents would be required. And so that was part of the story.
So it sort of snowballed once the thing moved along.
Indeed it did.
And I suppose initially the motivation was to secure the area, but then the whole question is, well, it has to be useful and implemented, so what does that mean?
And through that conversation there was dialogue with the council, and I think we got lots of useful hints about other notices of requirement where challenges came from, understanding the construction extent and the mitigations that would be required in a regional consent space. And there was quite a lot of dialogue around, should we be providing for the regional consents and applying for those at the same time? KiwiRail was of the view that it needed to establish the designation footprint, and I was comfortable with that because it's certainly something that I've seen happen and worked through with other projects, and then they would come back as soon as they can to receive the to prepare and lodge the resource consents.
Can I just pause you there? I just need a 5-minute break.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
So hopefully that gives you a little an explanation of the journey to date and how the designation extent came to part to be in the sense it is, and then also why there's that gap in terms of the regional consent aspect and what we've tried to do through the designation to allow for those requirements, but at the same time to separate the functions of the two councils in that respect. And I'll expand on that a little bit further. So from here on, assuming...
There's no statutory requirement for you to get the regional consent.
There is no statutory requirement. And just on that, designating or requiring authorities approach those, the strategy of does it get regional consents with or without, or the designation on its own. Excuse me. And a lot of that comes down to the nature of the project. A lot of it comes down to some of the dependencies in terms of the work that needs to be done to acquire and access the land. The conversations, if it's a reserve, the processes under the Reserves Act that still might have to be completed. So there are lots of interactions that the council would need to consider in the designation process, but equally to give effect to that designation and therefore have comfort that you can move into the regional consent process sometimes requires further work. And essentially that's what we see about to happen. Once the designation is effective in the district plan, there's some certainty that in terms of perhaps even accessing the land so that investigations could be undertaken.
That's a good point. But you haven't actually taken a strictly binary approach in the sense that you've said, well, everything that's to do with region, ignore. What you've said is we're content to provide you with the evidence that shows that we have a level of comfort that there is a rational basis for applying for those consents. And we accept that, say, for example, in relation to Tangata Whenua, they may see the same situation more holistically, not in light of those legal demarcations. And consequently, to the extent that we can use the process and the implementation to inform those, then we're open to that. Is that fair?
Absolutely, and thank you. You've almost preempted some of the condition suggestions that we've made to pick those aspects up, which I'll take you through a little bit later.
Yeah.
But I think what we wanted to do was to make sure that, in a spatial sense, the designation and resource consents were provided for, because there are spatial elements in terms of the regional consents. And then as we've worked through the conditions for the designation, also look at how those functions aligned and what was important. And we've refined those a little bit further as a result of the conversations through the hearing to date. Excuse me. And one of the issues that's popped up along the way is a level of disagreement between the reporting planning team and ourselves around the lapse period. And I think just to explain the next phase perhaps might be useful to put some context to that. So literally, Kiwi Rail will need to undertake, and Mr. Motts and Dr. Havelt explained some of the types of investigations that would have to be undertaken on the land to give Kiwi Rail more information so that it could actually confirm the cost of this project, for example, because of the nature and type of earthworks and stabilisation works that may be required, and how that could inform the design. So the ecological assessments, in my view and experience, you've got to have at least a year so you can watch the seasonal changes and be able to monitor groundwater for a period of time so that you understand what those elements are. So Kiwi Rail would have, as a minimum, the need to get access to the land, and given the size of the land, access to multiple pieces of land to undertake those investigations. And the logistics of that in itself are challenging. Depending on the nature of those investigations, it may be that regional consents are also required because of groundwater bores and the need to monitor. So there's a range of interdependencies just in terms of undertaking the site investigations to give sufficient information to inform the next phase. And so we're really mindful of the need to having got to this point in terms of the location, identified the extent to understand in more depth, what's in this location.
So in terms of that point that I think you made, to actually do the investigation, in many cases you'll need to acquire the land. So the delay, the lapse period doesn't necessarily speak to the delay of delay in acquisition, because fundamentally to do the job you need to even prepare to consider to do the job you need to acquire the land.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And there are And I think you asked a question around land holdings. There are large lots and there are quite small lots. And the gaps, if through the process you can talk to one landowner, you get access and you know the site visit from a non-intrusive investigation. Site visits have been well received by the landowners. But there's a difference in terms of actually bringing machinery on and undertaking drilling and that sometimes the quite intrusive types of surveys that would be required. And you're, from a due diligence perspective, the extent of land means that we're not going to be over, they won't be able to investigate every single piece of land, but they need to do sufficient to give comfort that the reporting can give KiwiRail again comfort that it's able to be developed. So I think the logistics of that, I'm also mindful that there are processes through that process, you know, land disturbance, there's a requirement to get archaeological authorities and there may be some wildlife permits required because of the types of work involved with lizards and if there are trees that have to be removed, maybe bat roosts. So really mindful that while those things can all be, many of those things can be done concurrently, they don't always happen ideally in a program sequence. Project managers go grey over the prospect of bringing all these pieces together. And so I just wanted to give you a sense of some of the challenges, even once KiwiRail has access to the land, to be able to take it to the next stages in terms of development. And just picking up on that matter, and it came through what we've suggested in respect of that, and it touches to the point that you raised about Mana Whenua involvement in some of these processes. What I've suggested is that we look at a condition that actually brings Mana Whenua into the process to be involved in those, because as soon as you're disturbing the ground, you've got accidental discovery issues probably, to convey, and also an understanding of the protocols and the appropriateness of some of the works. And so we've suggested a specific way of approaching that to help have Mana Whenua assist in developing protocols about educating people and making sure that appropriate processes are in place.
The other thing about the lapse period is that there is some jurisprudence around substantially giving effect to, and I'm partially responsible for a concept called establishment conditions and implementation conditions. And a lot of these conditions are framed as establishment conditions. So you could get into a murky debate about had you given effect to.
And for me, that murky debate is often between the council and a requiring authority. There's no public view of that, and yeah. I'm very mindful that having been on the receiving end of requests from requiring authorities back in the day, look, this is what we've done. We've been giving effect to it. You know, let's not worry. You know, we don't need to worry too much. Or can you just use 184 and section 184 and extend because this is what we've been achieving. That's not a very transparent process, and while I take it that there's a balance in there somewhere, I think to recognise that 15 years may be closer, it's possibly conservative, but I can't land on a number of years it's going to take to do all of this work, and 10 might be at nine years and 7 months, this is where we're up to, can we extend it?
Well, given that the consequence of a lapse period is that the designation ceases to be on the plan,
yes.
And how would you know that it happened except by act of the regulator in removing the plan provision? The only thing that I can think of as serving a usefully shorter period is the concern around getting on and acquiring land. Other than that, I don't see a planning rationale for it. So that's why my questions have been directed a little bit at well, what risk is there that this will simply lie without getting on with the acquisition phase.
And I recognise that that's something that we can't. The risk is the challenge of. No, I'll step back on that one. There are risks with designations of being in successive district plans and literally being rolled over.